It's time for Rebel Extra, brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers, live from Office Bar and Naked City Pizza on Paradise Road. Here's your hosts, Tyler Bischoff and Steve Cofield.
We are live from the Office Bar right next to Naked City Pizza. It's a 65-61 loss for the Runnin' Rebels as Cincinnati comes in and knocks off UNLV by 4 points. Adam Hill, Steve Cofield, both should be joining me soon, but they are both still making their way over from the Thomas and Mack as the Rebels fell to Cincinnati. It was second half. Decent game from UNLV. They outscored Cincinnati by 5 points. They just never really could get over the hump. They never were able to tie the game. Never were able to take the lead in the second half, cut the lead down to a single possession a few times. But it really sort of stayed in that 5 to 6 point range for the majority of the second half. But it was a solid second half after a turnover-filled first half for UNLV. UNLV comes out of this game, and they started with 3 turnovers on their first 3 possessions. After they lost to Valpo in a game in which they had 25 turnovers, they started this one with 3 on their first 3 possessions, and it looked like it was going to be really ugly. But they actually ended up only turning the ball over 14 times in this game. The second half, they were really good taking care of the ball. Just 5 turnovers in that second half to end up with 14. Cincinnati ended up having more, 17 in the game and 11 in the second half as UNLV's defense picked it up there. Adam Hill has now sat down with us as he made it over. Which, did you go over to talk to Mick Cronin afterwards?
I did.
How was Mick Cronin?
He was okay. He was happy-ish, okay. I guess you could say.
Well, we'll have that audio here in a little bit to play from Mick Cronin talking to the media.
The
ravenous Las Vegas media.
Yeah, I would say there was...
We do have it ready to go?
Wow, that was quick.
All right, if it's ready, let's play. Here's Mick Cronin post-game.
Mick, you said you wanted a challenge after Tuesday's game. Did you get the challenge you were seeking?
Oh, yeah. I thought, this game got real, real physical. Almost out of hand at times. But, when you're on the road and you're playing a team that's got their back against the wall, they really needed a win in this game because this is their last home game for like 20 days. They weren't going to go down without a fight. I told the guys at halftime they weren't going to go down without a fight. So not happy, obviously, with the turnovers. But really happy with Keith Williams' performance. I thought he really bailed us out. He and Elio Sosemi in the second half. Kane Broome obviously made some plays on offense. But, we answered the question, can we win when Jaron Cumberland doesn't have a typical Jaron Cumberland game? We were able to get a win on the road with him in foul trouble and really not playing up to his standards or really anywhere near what he's capable of. So a lot of positives to come from the game. Obviously, a lot of things we still need to get better at.
Obviously, you're going to nitpick at this. What do you think you'll want to take out?
I think, I got to keep reminding myself that, just because Trey and Nasir and some of these guys are playing a lot of minutes for the first time in their career, just because they have a couple good games, they're not all of a sudden become vastly experienced players. It's going to be a process. You got to keep coaching and keep trying to get them better. And they'll learn from today's experience. Neither one of them had an offensive rebound today. But if you go on the road and hold the team to 35% shooting in their own gym, you're going to have a chance to win games.
How did you like the way you guys responded to the physicality?
Well, the problem is it's hard to respond when another team's shooting free throws all the time. We're a team that prides ourselves on not putting teams on the foul line. Some of it I thought was tough. Some of it I thought was us. We made some really, really boneheaded plays. Got outside of our what we do. Just some really like Jaron's 4th foul. Justin and Keith had just a couple reach-in fouls. Trey's 5th foul. Just no point in some of those fouls. But that's all stuff we got to clean up.
People, I think, are interested to see how you guys come out of this 5-game stretch, starting with this one, just because of the caliber of competition, I think.
Yeah, sure.
Is that Are you also interested to see what how the team emerges from that, or is that kind of a false deadline?
I just try to stay focused on teach, coach, and we'll improve. And you can't get caught up in results because you got to get better. I mean, we won today. And we got a lot of things we didn't do well today. But you got to celebrate the things you did do well. Like I said, you know, Keith and Ellie on the glass in the second half were big for us. And celebrate the plays we did make and try to eliminate mistakes. And stay focused on improvement, not results. Because so there's four games left in the stretch you mentioned.
Yeah.
Well, after that, there'll be 22 games left in the year. So you got to just keep getting better.
What'd you guys do well to clamp down on UNLV? Final 3 minutes.
I was happy with our defense pretty much the entire game. We thought if we kept them out of transition, because they're such a young team trying to search for an identity, that they might struggle with our half-court defense because we do some different things that cause people trouble. So, you know, you got to eliminate their offensive rebounding is the best thing they do. So their second-chance points, we held them to 16. They still got 16 offensive rebounds, but they only got 16 points off of that. They're an excellent offense. We won't play anybody rebounds the ball on offense the way they do.
What do they do well to slow down Cumberland?
I thought Marv had a great game plan. Doubled him off every screen, doubled him off every ball screen, every baseline screen. Really made him work hard. I thought they had an excellent game plan against him.
There was a lot of talk in the Las Vegas media this week about your return to Las Vegas. I mean, was that an issue for you? Do you feel comfortable with that at all?
Well, I will say this. For a kid from Cincinnati, the fact that people in Las Vegas know who I am, that's quite a compliment. I'm a humble guy from Cincinnati. Any interest they showed in me back whenever that happened was much appreciated.
Anything else?
All right, guys. Thanks,
awesome. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
He is just a humble guy from Cincinnati. People don't know who Mick Cronin is? Mick Cronin thinks people don't know who Mick Cronin is?
Also, a kid from Cincinnati. He went humble guy from Cincinnati and kid from Cincinnati.
That's right.
I'm just a kid. Hey, listen now, Tyler. I'm just a kid from Cincinnati. I, you know, people talk about me. That's an accomplishment in its own.
He was almost the coach here. Of course people know who he is.
You were the coach here for 48 hours.
Yeah, kind of.
Yes, people know who you are. And yes, people are interested. And yes, people booed you.
What did you think of the reception for Mick Cronin?
I recorded it. I was ready for it. I actually thought – so we talked all week about how bad would it be, would they be booing, everything else. And then when they started introducing the Cincinnati players, it seemed like there was more Cincinnati fans than Rebel fans there. And I was like, well, this isn't going to be much of a reaction at all. But there was pretty good booing. I thought there was a pretty good round of boos for Cronin.
It was better than I expected.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to be that loud.
All that tells you – people listen to us.
That's right. We're important.
Yes.
702-364-1100 is the phone number. You can call in and give us your thoughts as UNLV falls to Cincinnati 65-261. We will take a break out here at the Office Bar next to Naked City Pizza. We'll come back hopefully with your calls and a little bit more breakdown on the game that UNLV just lost.
Now, back to Office Bar and Naked City Pizza for Rebel Extra. Brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers.
4-point loss for UNLV. Tyler Bischoff and Adam Hill. Come on by Naked City Pizza or the Office Bar or give us a call. 702-364-1100. The number 702-364-1100. So, Adam, is moral victory the takeaway from this game?
I mean, yes. I would say you played a decent half of basketball against a good team.
Cincinnati's not great by any means, but they're certainly the best team UNLV play in the non-conference. I guess they could play TCU in the Diamondhead Classic, and TCU would probably be a little bit better than Cincinnati. But this is probably the best team you're going to play in the non-con.
Yep.
And first half was pretty ugly. Second half, they cut down on the turnovers. Still had a tough time getting quality shots, but they got to the free throw line a lot, and it just they don't have enough offensive firepower to ever overcome that, you know, 5-6 point margin. It was always seemed to be stuck at 5 or 6 points. On the phone with us is Fernando.
Are you sure?
Fernando,
we just got to yell that Fernando's on the phone.
Fernando's important. We have to get the calls from Fernando. Fernando, how you feeling tonight?
I'm doing A-okay, and very proud of the Rebels tonight. We just have to cut down on our turnovers and make the free throws. Cronin is boring as heck. And very proud. I'm looking for an 18-19 game win season. And Sister Jean's team, the Rambers, would beat both these teams by 15 easily.
Easily. We appreciate that, Fernando. Covered a lot there.
Happy holidays, guys. Happy holidays.
Thank you. 18-19 win season for UNLV. Cut down on the turnovers. Make some free throws. Do we want to go into the free throws right now? Or should we wait? Do you think other people will call about the free throws?
Well, I'm sure that people will. I heard people yelling throughout the game about them. I've heard people yelling for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years about free throws. Yeah, it was bad. You got to make them 3 of 8 in the first half. The first half, you know, there were certain points throughout the second half where they could have had a stop here, a stop there, a big basket here or there that could have changed the momentum of the game, that could have given them a chance to get over the top and get a victory. The first half is when they played themselves out of the game. And they tried to work back in. They never could. But that was turnovers, which was as many turnovers as they had made field goals, which was 9, 3 of 8 from the free throw line. Those things are both unacceptable.
The second half, on the free throws, the second half, they were 15 of 21, which is 71%. National average is 70%, so that's fine. And honestly, I mean, for the game, they shot 18 of 29. If they make two more free throws, they're at 69% for the game, yeah. And that's average. So, like, fans complain about the free throws. I don't think it was that big of a deal that they missed free throws because they shot close enough to what an average team would in a game. And the funny thing to me is Cincinnati fans think that the refs kept UNLV in the game by calling so many fouls and giving them free throws, whereas UNLV fans think that missed free throws cost them this game. Yeah. So it's terrific. It's all the same thing. John is on the phone. John, it's a 4-point loss for UNLV, but are you feeling okay with a moral victory?
Not really. I'm not too excited about moral victories because it doesn't look like there's a ton of upside to the season. I think you're going to have to get Hamilton and Hardy. You're going to have to play 30 minutes. You got to get that offense out there. I don't understand playing Natombi and Takachawala and that many minutes. And I also wondered how you ranked Marvin Menzies as a coach. Where do you think he is, and what kind of grade do you give him?
We appreciate that, John. So, on Hardy and Hamilton, 22 minutes for Amori Hardy. 22 points for Amori Hardy in 25 minutes. Hamilton gets 10 in 24 minutes. The thing from those two guys that it stuck out to me was they were the only two that could penetrate Cincinnati's defense.
Well, they could attack the defense without just giving the ball to them. They could actually attack and make a play. And there was a couple times, especially late in the game, Bryce made a couple of moves where he just didn't know where he was going. That kind of happens as a freshman. But he wasn't afraid, and he wasn't going to back down from the defense. And you saw that from Hamilton and Hardy. I thought that was a positive step. So if you're talking about moral victories, I don't love moral victories as a thing, but I do think that you have to look for things that went well in the game, like progress that was made and positive signs you can build on. So I think from that perspective, it's Hamilton showing confidence in his ability on the offensive end, Hardy certainly taking on a more prominent role and not being afraid to, you know, step up and be that guy on the offensive side, which they need. So those are good things that happen. Their ability to fight back and to adjust in the game to 9 turnovers in the first half to cutting those down in the second half. Those things are all positive signs that you can build on. And, you know, next time, I don't know that you're going to play a defense that good the rest of the year, but you know, hey, one of the best defenses in the country, we're able to go and compete with them and nearly come away with a win.
Yeah, it wasn't, I mean, between Hardy and Hamilton, Hardy was 6 of 11, Hamilton was 4 of 13 from the field. Like, neither one of them had a truly efficient night. I mean, Hardy got a free throw line a lot, but neither one of them had a truly efficient night. But I think the idea that this is probably the best defensive team you will play all season allows you to sort of take a step back from the inefficiency and say, yeah, but those two guys were still able to get into the paint. What happened after that wasn't always the greatest, but those two guys showed the ability to get through this Cincinnati defense. The bigger problem is that nobody else really did. Clyburn had a couple moments where he could, but nobody else really did show that they could do that. And I think that's going to be the problem going forward for UNLV is what are these offensive options in the future? Because there doesn't seem to be enough of them for this team to be a good enough offense through an entire season. You'll have games where Hardy and Hamilton are great, and, you know, maybe Robotham will finally have a game where he hits threes. He was 0 for 3 tonight, but throughout the course of the season, there's going to be a lot of games that against worse defenses that they still kind of look like this because they just don't have good enough offensive pieces.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. But, you know, it's those guys. And I think there were steps made by them that go beyond numbers and just what happened. I thought, you know, Amori being not afraid to be – and he never really has been afraid, but he's really showing signs of leadership on the floor. There was an inbounds play where they could not get the ball in. He had to throw it off a defender to try to get the reset and try to – then they reset it. And while they were waiting to kind of reset, he kind of went out and he was showing the guy – like, you got to be strong. If you're going to post up, be strong with it. Like, don't just stand there and put your hand in the air. Be strong, demand the ball, go get the ball. Like, he's being assertive in that manner, which I think you definitely need from a team. You need a guy who's able to not back down from the responsibility and to say, I'm gonna show you what needs to be done, and I'm going to do it and be a part of it.
I think some of the baseline inbound plays for UNLV probably were the best example of what they were dealing with Cincinnati, because they couldn't even get the ball in on a few plays. Like, there were some where Chris Clyburn had to bail them out by running back to half court to catch it and then dribbling up and draining a three.
But like, on this play that I'm talking about, they couldn't get anything going on the first one. They did it again, and then Clyburn actually made a hard cut to the basket, got the ball, and I think he went in and he got fouled. So he made something happen, and that was Hardy kind of directing traffic and getting it to the right guy. But you're right. I mean, they were completely overwhelmed defensively on some of the inbound plays where they were just like, there's nothing there.
On the idea of Hardy as the leader, and if you want to call him the point guard of this team, he plays 25 minutes. Noah Robotham plays 20. Robotham did not score in this game, was 0-for-4 and 0-for-3 from 3. When do you think Menzies makes that move more official that Amori Hardy is the number one point guard on this team? I don't know if it's putting him in the starting lineup, but when does it become, Amori Hardy's the guy with the ball in his hands at all times?
I mean, I imagine that it will at some point, but I also, like, I'm very slow to come around on that. Like, I like Amori Hardy's role. I like him playing off the ball when Robotham's in and then taking over some point guard minutes when he's not in there. I still believe in Noah Robotham as a legitimate point guard on this level. In this conference, when they started conference games, I think he'll shake the rust off a little bit more. I've watched enough of him in college to know what he can do.
What about his shooting? Because he's under 30% coming in. He's 0 for 3
I think that's
tonight.
A year off.
You think that's what it is?
He made shots. Like, I've watched much of his career. He made shots.
I still – because he shot 39% in 3 years at Akron, and that's a better sample to go off of than the first 7 games of the year here. But if it's the year off, I mean, at some point he's got to make shots for UNLV for him to be effective.
I think he will.
Does it come, by the time Mountain West play gets here?
We talked earlier, like, the conference – doesn't matter.
So moral victories is fine.
Moral victories is fine. So, by the time conference play rolls around, I think one of the things they really want to have happen is that him come around and get his shot going. They want that to develop.
Steve Cofield is here.
Robotham was a topic during the Menzies postgame. So a question was asked about Hardy, right? Hey, Hardy just had a big game. Are you thinking about moving him into the starting lineup? Menzies responded saying, I like Hardy off the bench, but we do need Robotham to play better. But he believes that he's going to make shots. He says he makes shots in practice. It's going to happen. But, I mean, he's getting, you know, you could tell he's getting a little exasperated, frustrated that it just has not worked to this point for Noah Robotham.
Well, there was a point in the game for sure. Noah got a shot from the corner, and it was nowhere close. It was a terrible shot, and you can see Menzies furious on the bench, and I think he went right to get I think it was Hardy that was on the bench to go in for him, but he immediately took him out. And so
I also think a lot of Hardy's three-point looks haven't been that great all season. I'm not sure.
Hardy's or Robotham's?
I meant Robotham.
Okay.
Robotham's three-point looks haven't been that great, and I'm not sure, is that the flow of the offense where he's not getting open looks?
Well, I think he's
I see a lot of contested threes over much bigger players. Now, he's a smaller guy, so people are going to contest it. They're going to be bigger than him, but, like, a lot of times he's taking it over 6'6", 6'7", 6'8".
Yeah, I think he's forcing it. I think that he's trying to get his shot back. He's trying to get back to where he wants to be. He's frustrated by the fact that he's not able to just come in and pick up right where he left off at Akron after a year off. So I think he is forcing his offense a little bit, and I think there's times in the offense where a lot of players on this team have to force shots. Like, there's not a whole lot of open looks to be had out of the flow of the offense a lot of times. So sometimes you just have to.
I think there's been 3 times this year at the end of the first half where Robotham has taken a 3 because they're trying to go 2-for-1, and he's missed all of them. They haven't gone in. And Menzies has talked a lot about the three-point shooting of Robotham and how his shots have been, the selection has not been very good. When he's taken good shots, Menzies thinks he's making the good shots. It's been the bad shots that have been the problem. Mark is on the phone. Mark, a four-point loss for UNLV. How's that sit with you?
You know, very disappointed because it just looks like it's going to be a tough December for the Rebels and a pretty long season. I disagree with you thinking Noah's going to get better throughout the season. I mean, it's been seven games, and the problem, I think, and maybe to his credit, is that he's not getting good looks. I mean, the offense is just – people aren't getting good looks anywhere. They're having to penetrate and one-on-one. And I would like to see some backdoor cuts and more screens and, heck, maybe get in a Princeton offense if we're going to – these guys can't shoot the ball. They need to get as good a look as they can. And I'm just kind of disappointed how the program is and what's the future for the Rebels. What are we looking at? Do we make it with Marvin Menzies? Is he our coach for the future?
Appreciate the call, Mark.
First of all, the Princeton offense works because you have five guys that can shoot and you have centers that are really good in the high post and can pass and shoot. I don't think that's really the solution to look at. And, again, on the Robotham thing, there was, like, 19 questions posed there. On the Robotham thing, I mean, you pointed it out. You can't look at a seven-game sample size as more representative than a three-season sample size. You just can't.
I think they've played about not even 25% of the season, seven games in. So, I would tend to believe he's going to start shooting eventually, but he's got to do it. I mean, at some point, like, if you're a UNLV fan, I don't blame you at all for thinking Noah Botham's not a good three-point shooter because he hasn't done it for you yet. Yeah. Like, he has not had a good game. Like,
yeah, I don't expect you guys to have watched all of his games at Akron. Like, I'm a nerd that did that. But he can play, and he's good.
On the lineups for this game, we talked a ton about the point guard spots and this idea of bringing guys off the bench. Because in the pregame show, you're talking about Turvell Beck and liking him coming off the bench. What does that mean exactly? Like, why would you like a certain player to come off the bench? Because to me, it's I want Amari Hardy playing as many minutes at point guard as possible. I don't want him, you know, coming off the bench.
Yeah, I think it's more of a mentality thing for one, and this is where one of the places where I kind of break from just looking at numbers and analytics, like I know a lot, like you do a lot, and I like to. It's that I just feel there's something about a mindset of like. The other team looks at like, oh, these are the starters. Okay, like, oh, this guy coming off the bench, he's clearly worse than them. Like, there's a little bit of a let up, and you're letting the starters get, you know, 2, 3, 4 minutes of worn down a little bit, and then bringing an energy guy off to try to, you know, just bring some energy and some offense off the bench, which makes zero sense, I know. But there's just always, like, you know, it's different levels, of course, but, like, playing in high school, you just felt that. You just felt like a guy that came off the bench that was, like, a really good scorer. You're like, it's just that much more impact for some reason.
So you like the idea of Hardy coming off the bench still?
Well, I like the idea of – I actually like Hardy and Robotham playing together. I like Robotham at point. I like Hardy being out there with him. And then, you know, they have another option if the offense is breaking down. It's not just Robotham trying to create something. It's there's Hardy. And then if he can create something, he can kick out to Robotham and get more open looks. Like, I think that they could work together quite a bit. And they've been on the floor together. But I'd like to see Hardy get a lot of minutes, of course. And I'd like to see Robotham get a lot of minutes, so I'd like to see them play together a lot more.
All right, let me know if you think we should be crediting UNLV for this. The first 5 minutes of the second half was probably the best five-minute stretch the starting lineup has played this year.
Yeah.
But the score after those 5 minutes was 4-2 in the second half. Like, it wasn't like that starting lineup was scoring a bunch of points and didn't even really cut in the lead that much, only 2 points. But they were forcing a lot of turnovers. Cincinnati didn't get any good shots in that stretch, which I think is the point of that starting lineup. It's a more defensive starting lineup. So should I be giving that starting lineup credit for playing well in that 5 minutes, or was it more about Cincinnati just had a terrible start to the second?
No, I think they were playing well. Okay. I thought the turnovers were forced. I thought they were frustrating them a little bit on the offensive end of the floor. And I thought they were, even though they weren't really scoring, they were getting somewhat of good looks. They can't score. It's an ongoing issue. When you have in the half-court offense, they can't really score. They've got to try to create easier looks.
Sorry, I'm jumping in and out.
That's okay.
But I built on it during the game. I think it was Grimala's point, and I'm sure you backed it up as well. When you play Cincinnati, and really this is going to be the story of the season for UNLV against teams that don't play fast. Cincy's possessions on offense, they came in, 317 in the country at a 353, and they still went under. their normal number. They averaged 69 possessions. They had 62.
Yep.
So that was one of the things the Rebels never really accomplished, trying to speed up the game. They got caught up in Cincinnati's game. And they're, I mean, it's pretty clear. This team has to create defensive havoc to speed up the game and get more possessions, because as a half-court team, it's still very much a work in progress. You know, we talk about Robotham, you know, from three, but it's very much a work in progress. So they needed to speed it up, but they just never could against Cincinnati. I mean, Cincinnati, they are good at what they do, which is we're going to play about 65 to 70 possessions, and you're going to play our game.
We're going to fight you on every possession. It's going to be a fight every time down the floor.
I'm sure you guys reacted to this. What do you think about Cronin saying after the game it was too physical?
It's ridiculous. I think what he's really saying is, we play that way. I don't know why they're calling all those fouls on us.
Well, they were very much on the wrong side of FTAs.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
It's the road.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. I don't think that's the way it should be. I also thought that the Rebels, I mean, they dribbled into penetration too many times and had too many turnovers, but the Rebels really attacked. I'm not saying every foul was justified. I don't think Cincy attacked as much.
If you're UNLV, and what we saw in the second half was Hamilton and Hardy driving into the paint quite a bit, and when you drive into three defenders, you're going to turn it over a lot, and you're going to get fouled a lot. Like, that's just what's going to happen when that's inviting contact when you do that. So that's what's going to end up being the foul calls. And the free throw discrepancy got out of hand in the second half. That's when Cincinnati was turning the ball over. Like, we've talked about UNLV turnovers, and you can't get shots and second chances. You're not going to get free throw attempts when you turn the ball over on, what was it, a third of their second half possessions. Yeah. Like, you can't get to the free throw line if you're turning it over. So, I don't know. I didn't think it was anything crazy, but if you're Mick Cronin, that's what you're going to after the game. Like, a team shoots many more free throws than
just
you.
Just a kid from Cincinnati.
Just humble. He's a humble kid.
He's a humble kid. He's a humble guy.
At least he didn't drop in. I guess we really didn't set him up well. There's more things important in this world.
702-364-1100 is the phone number. We'll take a break. We're out here at the Office Bar next to Naked City Pizza. It's a 65-61 loss for the Rebels.
Hardy, double team on the right side, still dribbling, then forces up a very tough shot, which goes in. It's a three!
As he was sitting on the bench, falling away.
Wow!
Now, back to Office Bar and Naked City Pizza for Rebel Extra. Brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers.
Welcome back. Office Bar and Naked City Pizza. UNLV loses to Cincinnati 65-61. We'll take your call, 702-364-1100. But first, a little bit of sound from Marvin Menzies post-game, wrapping this one up.
We have many goals that we achieved, but inevitably we fell short, as you know. But I think the fans that attended the game and the ones that watched it on TV saw the makings of the future in terms of our energy and effort. Now we got add the discipline, add the experience, add the connectivity, and the things that we can add this year. So with that, I'm proud. Always hurts to lose, obviously. Especially because sometimes you feel like they're missed opportunities, you know. And I think this was one game that was a good opportunity on our schedule. And we grew, but we just didn't blossom. The roses just didn't come out, but the plant grew. So I'll take that. We're moving in the right direction. All right, open it up for questions.
You've talked about the seniors being important to this team's success. Two of them struggled. Can you talk about the spark that Chris provided specifically in the second half when the team cut the deficit to four?
You know, Chris was really good. I thought that, you know, the way he played defense in the second half was a big part of why Cincinnati struggled a little bit. You know, it's hard to play on the road, so you got to give them credit. Cincinnati's a good team. They'll probably end up being in the top 25, I would imagine. But it was their first true road contest. And so I thought that having a guy like Chris and having some experienced guys would be the reason that if we got over the hump, you know, two or three of those guys play well, I think we could have pulled it out. And they did a good job on Shakur. They did a really good job on him. We tried to get him touches in areas of his strength. Didn't work out where he had the most effective game today. And then also Noah struggled a little bit too. You know, his was more from the offensive side. I thought he played some pretty good defense. He had three steals, and he was in great positions for the majority of times. Got a dive, dove on a ball, had some toughness there, and got a jump ball situation. You know, he brought some leadership that didn't show up in the scouting report. But I was, and him and I both know, man, they're going to start going down. It's just, you know, it's unfortunate because he's a really good shooter. And, you know, it just wasn't his night tonight. But long answer to a question about the seniors. But yeah, I think that you're right. I think we need them, right? I mean, that's our whole thing is we want to be in it, get old and stay old, and you know that's preferably with guys that have been with you for 3 or 4 years. This is his third year. Noah's first, and Shakur's second. So inevitably, the paradigm will look with four and you know juniors and seniors that have been there 3 and 4, maybe sometimes 5. That's when you're going to be special. But in the interim, we got to win these. When you're right there, you got to be a little more disciplined, and you got to come out of the timeout and do what I said. So they did a better job of that this game than they did in the previous game. So we took a step there too.
Did you feel like some of the foul calls in the first half kept the team away from kind of finding an offensive rhythm?
Oh, is that it? Is that the end of it? 702-364-1100. Give us a call if you've got any thoughts on what Marvin Minzie had to say or anything about the game. So was Marvin Minzie losing his voice?
Oh, I think he's lost to the last couple of games. He had nothing. It was actually good today as compared
was
to...
Was it? I mean, I haven't been to the last couple of post games, but that's as hoarse as I've found him.
He was super hoarse after the loss to Valpo.
Really? Is he losing his voice or is he sick?
No, I think he yelled a lot during the game. He was, again, super demonstrative on the sidelines.
So he said early on in sort of wrapping up his points was the plant grew, but the flowers didn't bloom, something along that for the analogy. It goes back to what Adam and I first started with, talking about moral victory. I'm kind of like, I know moral victory is like, you don't want those, but I'm kind of okay with that assessment of this game.
I think it's totally acceptable in this spot. You want to win the game, and they could have won the game. Obviously, it's a totally different game if you make 4 or 5 more free throws out of those 11 misses. That changes the way the game's played. You don't come out of Valpo and go, hey, moral victory. But against Cincinnati, I mean, they come in, they punch you in the mouth, and I thought UNLV responded well. And I think one of the biggest things they accomplished today, they definitely have 4-2 guards and wings. If they execute, they have a way to stop guys. And that's going to be gigantic because Cumberland is a really good player, and he got up 5 shots and fouled himself out. He was so frustrated. And between Tomboy and Clyburn, so that's something positive to build on. Listen, I don't love moral victories, but this could have been a blowout the way they were playing early on. They were not good offensively for the first 14 minutes. I mean, hell, the game got off to – they got 0 points at the first break, and it was 24-12 with 6.5 minutes left in the first half.
The good thing for UNLV is Cincinnati – is just like UNLV, just a little bit better. Like, they're not very good offensively. They don't shoot a lot of threes, and their games are going to be ugly all season, too. Like, these are very similar teams. Just
they're better defensively, and they're better offensively.
They're better than UNLV, but they're the same type of team. Like, that's the reason Cincinnati didn't run away with this game, is because they have similar offensive problems as UNLV.
I think the only problem
it's almost
saying
like
that,
Tyler Bischoff glass overflowing.
I think we've and ruined then, him.
And then Adam was like, poured out.
Right, our negative just nonsense is ruining him. But you can't go negative against us. It's impossible.
Yeah, you can. I just don't see how you can be incredibly negative out of this one, except for
not about the game
execution last 3 minutes. You know, obviously they have to. I heard you guys, you know, on the way in, you clearly have to execute and get good shots, and you need go-to players. Today, you trusted Hamilton and you trusted Hardy. The other quandary they've got to solve is Shakur Justin. Now, Justin was target number one of Cincinnati. They game planned for him, but I'll give you a small example in the second half. Justin has a guard ISO'd on him on the low block, right? And I knew I was going to lose it there. And Hardy's on the left wing. He can feed it down. He's going against Broom. It's like 6-1. It's Justin against Broom on the right block. And he can feed it to him, but instead, Justin gives it a second and then goes up and sets a pick. And I don't know if that is Hardy's fault for waving him out, not getting the ball down to him quickly enough.
They
Justin,
do that a lot.
Justin not pointing out, you know, hey, I've got a little guy on me. You got to get me the ball.
It's Justin being too unselfish.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, we've talked about this all the time. They wanted him to take that next step. They want him to be the guy because he's more than capable of being the guy in that situation you're describing, of setting his feet, backing down, demanding the ball, taking the pass, and going and scoring. He's perfectly capable of doing that. He's really good at that. No, he should have no problems with it. He doesn't want to be that guy. He's too unselfish. He'd rather go set a screen and let a teammate score. That's what he wants to do. And we wanted him, you know, all offseason, like, this is the year he's going to step up. McCoy's gone. He's going to step out of the shadow, be the star. He's never wanted that. And this is, it might sound like a criticism. It's not.
No.
That's just not in his personality to be the guy that's like, give me the ball, I'm going to go score. And sometimes you need that mentality to be that great player. He doesn't have that.
I don't think it's beyond fixing, though.
He leads the team in turnovers. Came in second in the conference in turnovers per game. Had five more tonight.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because there are times in the game where he's trying to be that guy.
I think it's because he's on the perimeter too much.
Yeah, and a lot of them are offensive fouls, too, where he's backing
yeah,
down
where
two or today.
Trying to take it to the hole, and that's not something that he's always done.
I guess it's a blend because he was trying to force it on whatever it was, the first or was it the second? That took him out of frankly, there was a little acting on that, too.
A little.
And you have to – I mean, it is part of – when you're a veteran player, it is part of recognizing what goes on with college referees. They love calling the charge. So if some guy on the other team throws himself into the stands, they're going to call the charge.
Oh, they get so excited. Watch them start running and starting to point before they even make the call. It's just so obnoxious.
The idea of him being on the perimeter, though, he wasn't truly out of the three-point line last year, but he hung out in the 15-foot range most of the time last season. But he was able to catch and score because his man was worrying about helping onto McCoy or somebody else, so he had a step on him. This year, he's just catching the ball from 15 or 20 feet away, and it's trying to take his man one-on-one. Yeah, I think that's where some of the problems come
I think from. It's the team's responsibility and the coach's responsibility to get him in better spots so that he's comfy and there's not a whole lot of thinking that he has to do where he can just make his move and get to the hole.
Ryan is on the phone. Ryan, it's a four-point loss for UNLV. Are you into moral victories?
No, I never have been. But what I want to talk about, gentlemen, is should UNLV's fans accept the fact that Running Rebel basketball is officially dead? Meaning, do you think Marvin Menzies has any plans of whatever of playing in the 80s or 90s? No. The answer is no. He wants to win games 62-58. So I think fans need to accept that. What do you think?
I don't think that's true. I mean, that's not really what he's been as a coach. That's the personnel right now. They're trying to build. I don't think that their plan is to win games in that way. Their plan is to try to win games, and they're building to a program where it can be. And you can't be to that 80s and 90s level without, you know, without taking steps to get there.
Wait, when he says 80s and 90s, is he referring to the decades or the point totals?
No, I thought it was the decades.
I was thinking it was point totals.
Style of play.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought he was going style of play.
I thought he's not trying to reclaim the 80s and 90s, is what he said.
Yeah, I was thinking he was going like number of points they put up there. When Marvin Menzies took the job, he played to the fans and said, you can't walk the ball up the court when you're the Running Rebels. And to be fair, they don't truly walk the ball up the court on offense. They're not really pushing it as fast as you possibly can, but they're not walking it up either. But I think the way Marvin Menzies builds his roster, it's not going to be a running offense. It's going to be, let's get the best centers we can on the floor and throw it into it.
I actually think they have the potential to be, it might not be straight out run, but go fast in the half court. I think they have three guys who are good off the bounce and can penetrate. And have done it pretty well. Hamilton in spots, but Hardy can do it, and certainly Chris Clyburn can do it.
In his career at New Mexico State, his first 4 years, they were really fast. They were one of the top 50 teams in the country.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
All of those years. But his last 4 years at New Mexico State, they are in the 250s, 302 in terms of tempo at New Mexico State. So once he got the Pascal Siakams and the Sim Bulars, he slowed the game down. It was like, that's where we're going. That's how he's building his roster here.
Yeah.
I mean, they start the season with Mbaki Jiang, and they're saying that's the guy we're throwing the ball to. Mbaki Jiang's not the guy you would have picked to be the number one option on this team, but that's what Marvin Menzies wants to do. So I think, like, if in Menzies' perfect world, he's got the best center in the country, and that's who he's running his offense through.
I think he wanted to get Derek Smith's.
Yes, he would take Derek Smith as a transfer right now.
We like that guy. Just throw it down, let him operate for like 15 seconds and see what's going to happen.
But I think that's what he wants to do. Now, you can still play fast with the center, but I don't think his style of play is going to be anything in terms of up-tempo trying to run the ball and run people off the floor.
Yeah, I was thinking back to those more early New Mexico State days, and I just feel like the later ones, like, you can't run when you have Bular. Like, it's impossible. He can't run. So maybe that was a reason that it slowed down. And I'd like to think that it's personnel, but it's, again, he's the one that brings in the personnel. I mean, they've got guys that I think are capable of, you know, getting out in the wings defensively and creating turnovers and pushing the ball up the floor. I think they've got those guys. They haven't really taken advantage of it and used it in that manner. And you're right, they tend to want to play a little bit slower on offense. But I don't know that he's married to it.
No, I don't think he likes
he likes playing that way with this personnel.
If he had had a relationship, instead of getting Brandon McCoy, if he'd had a relationship that led him to a five-star wing last season, the offense would have looked different completely. Like, that's what he would have run the team through last year. But it was Brandon McCoy instead. Now, he's still building over that. He's still in Baki Jong as a starting center. That's what he wants to go to. But, yeah, it's still somewhat of the personnel that he is responsible for. On the idea of, like, this whole offensive ineptness that we see from this team, their best chance to win is to force turnovers and get as many transition baskets as possible, right?
They have to.
Like, that's the best chance. And so I wouldn't say I'm rethinking it, but, like, I love to see as much as Hardy and Hamilton. But, like, maybe Joel Tomboy needs to be, like – they need to activate him more. They just go create some turnovers, Joel Tomboy, because that's – anytime they can get a transition basket, it's infinitely better than anything they're going to do in the half court.
Well, it's a – once their half court offense gets set up, it's a loss. Like, I mean, they might score, but that's a loss for that possession. You need to try to score easy baskets. When you have trouble scoring, like, the best way to try to fix that is to try to get them much easier.
So what's the – I don't know. How do they do more of that? Like, how do they create more
turnovers? It has to be with defense. I mean, you have to take chances. You have to get up in the wings. You have to, you know, put pressure on the ball. You have to make the other team make turnovers. You have to create that, and you have to be willing to occasionally give up free, you know, easy baskets yourself to create some for on your end. But I think there has to be a commitment to trying to, you know, get in the passing lanes and to get pressure on the ball and to speed other teams up. Make them play faster and make them make more turnovers and get yourself easy baskets. I think there has to be. I mean, I've said that about every team at UNLV for the last 15 years, but I just think that's the right way to go when you don't have a half-court offense that's going to generate a lot of easy looks.
Steve, what do you think of Jonathan Chamwechachua getting minutes down the stretch over in Baki Jong?
Interesting. Very interesting.
Well, he hit that weird, like, baseline hook shot.
Hey, he scored.
Yeah.
He made both of his free throws, too. He had four big points. It's going to be the Jonathan Chamwechachua comeback.
Yeah, I thought the lineups down the stretch without Mbake actually worked. So I don't know that – he's still a work in progress. And Marvin Menzies spent a good minute on Mbake. You know, he loves him, thinks he's a great kid, great character, but he's like – we just got to get him stronger, and I can't move the clock ahead. So I think he was saying there, from a physicality standpoint, you know, Mbake was having a little trouble. And then, you know, he also – the kid gets bad breaks sometimes with fouls. He also gets fouls that are silly fouls. I mean, he had a foul tonight where –
ran a guy over.
Well, the player stopped in front of him. So he was trying to avoid him, but, you know, he stopped in front of him and then goes down to the ground. So that hurt. Their mix – back to Houston, their mix of – getting Houston in the best spots to score and Mbake on the floor
doesn't work very well together.
I think it's worked well at times, but I'm still not sure that Houston should be the high post guy. I don't know who should be. You know, we've talked about Beck being the high post guy and playing the four, but because they're trying to feed Mbake, you know, so much, Houston's being, I don't think he's being utilized as well as he could be.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, I think it's they haven't done enough with them. I think if you were to list, like, offensive skill sets on this team, what Houston does is at the very top of the list, and they don't do enough to get that involved.
I also think there's some experimenting to be done. We talked about in the pregame with Smits versus Jung. I think at times if you can have Jung on the four, not on a, you know, super power five, not that the kid tonight, Brooks was, you know, an offensive whiz, but he's big dude, 250 pounds. I mean, he's a mature guy. Here's the other thing that was a little bit alarming, and it probably happened four times, is that their big beat the bigs from UNLV down the floor.
Yep.
That can't happen.
It's happened a couple of games. Smits beat Jong down the floor a few times in that Valpo game, too, and that's, like, we talk about running, and Baki Jong's the athletic big that you could conceivably run the floor with.
But there are times where I don't know what it is. I'd have to go back and look what he does if he's getting lost on the offensive end and out of position and is a bad spot to run back. But there are a few times every game where he gets beat down the floor by somebody that he probably shouldn't be getting beat down the floor by.
There's a lot of things to clean up.
Yeah, and in defense of Jong, I think ideally had he come into the program and the program is where Marvin Menzies wanted it to be, Jong's a redshirt. He doesn't play. So this is his first year, and he has a chance to get bigger and stronger, but they had to use him in spots last year.
He might not have gotten to this level if he hadn't played last year, though, too.
Argument last week, Steve.
It was.
That if Dwayne Morgan was here, it would have blocked Mbaki Jong's development.
I am arguing both sides.
Yeah. If Dwayne Morgan was here, they could have redshirted him.
But I've now seen another game where physically he had a little trouble matching up against a 240, 250-pound, 21, 22-year-old.
The good news on that front is, are they going to play this many physical teams in the Mountain West? Or this many teams at this level of physicality in the Mountain West? I mean, Cincinnati's going to be towards the top of the list in physicality.
It's going to flip from here, at least in the Mountain West Conference, where he's going to be playing a lot of dudes who are really fours and threes at center.
He's going to be less physical and more mobile is what's going to be the problem when they get into Mountain West.
Or they're going to play small.
We'll see. We saw more Juicing at center tonight. And we did see that with Turvell back at power forward. So Marvin Menzies, good Lord, he's played a ton of lineups. I almost feel bad for Mike Romala tracking the five-man lineups because Menzies is substituting all the time. UNLV loses 65-61 to Cincinnati. Adam Hill, Steve Cofield, Tyler Bischoff out here at the office bar and Naked City Pizza as we wrap this one up. Amori Hardy leads the team in scoring with 22 points. Rebels are now 4-3 on the year. Back-to-back losses at home. They go on the road for the first time at Illinois. That is next Saturday, and then it is BYU at T-Mobile Arena the Saturday after that. So a tough stretch here for the Runnin' Rebels. They'll have to go on the road and win to buck a losing streak. For everybody out here, it's Tyler Bischoff. Thanks for tuning in.